good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jean Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. Where we talk about wills, trusts, Medicaid, guardianships, probate, and we answer your questions. It's a call-in show. You can give us a call at 518-476-5900 and ask any question that's on your mind. Well, not any question. Related to estate planning and elder law.
Don't make it that broad of an invitation.
I have a question. Who's somebody's missing this morning?
Dave?
Yeah, where'd he go?
Good question.
Yeah,
I don't know where Dave is.
I don't know. It's a little too cold for golf, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
He's out in the field today.
He played last week. I know that.
Out in the course.
But I know. But last Saturday was beautiful, right?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Probably listening, taking notes on us right now.
Yeah, he probably is. So we better mind our P's and Q's. Yeah.
So, Phil, you had a live seminar. So let me say this is our first live seminar that we've done since since COVID.
Yeah. Right. Very exciting.
Great.
Glad to get back into the in-person, not that we weren't doing in-person presentations, but we weren't really hosting any, right? So this was the first, from what I understand, it was pre-me at Herzog, but you guys hadn't done one since, before COVID, like you said, right?
So we haven't.
Which has already been, what's before COVID? What does that mean these days? Is it 3 years ago?
It's 3 years.
Something like that, yeah.
It's wild.
3 years, it's crazy.
So, I mean, getting the word out there, I was hoping people would show up, wasn't sure, but more showed up than I even thought, which was fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
It was really good. Everyone was very involved, very interactive program, asked a ton of questions. It was great. We probably could have went for another hour, to tell you the truth.
And you guys had enough snacks.
We did. We had some cookies.
They're good cookies.
We had some candies on the table to enjoy while you listen to me speak.
Sounds good.
It was really good. Great. So, some of our radio listeners were there as well. Great. So
fantastic.
That's right. They want to find out more, right?
Yeah. If you guys are listening today, thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed. But if you missed my presentation yesterday, is there another chance, Jean-Marie?
Yes. So Dave and I are presenting on Monday. So we didn't say what the topic was. So the topic was wills versus trusts, which is one of our most popular ones that we do because people don't understand the differences between wills and trusts and when you have to go to probate. So it's really helpful for clients
It is very confusing. Jean-Marie, if me and you didn't do this every day, I don't think we'd understand it either. And it's easy to forget and things do change over the years with the rules, with Medicaid and all of that. So I think we even had yesterday some clients of ours in the past who wanted to brush up on things here again and some education, which is always great. I always say very corny, but education really is power and knowing your options and what you can do in certain situations.
I know some clients come to see if anything has changed since they signed their trust.
Because
for some of them, it may have been 10 years since they did their trust.
Yeah, easily. They might not have thought about it and say, hey, maybe I should brush up and see if there's anything I should be doing. And, that in-person, more intimate setting is a good place to ask questions too. A lot of people maybe not want to call into the radio show, but in person is a little bit easier and we can get a little more specific as well.
And as great as everyone was doing Zoom, we don't get as many questions on Zoom.
Yeah. In person is so much better.
There's more of a connection. I think you retain the knowledge better. There's a lot of pluses to the in-person, so I'm really happy
to
be back.
So Monday, you and Dave, Jean-Marie, are going
to
be where?
So Monday, we're going to be at the Staybridge Suites, which is off of Wolf Road.
Oh, right.
Colony Center, by the Macy's end of Colony Center. And I am speaking at 10, and Dave is speaking at 2. Okay. And we're both talking about wills versus trust.
Great. So two more chances, if any of you missed it out there.
Right.
Two more chances. Get down there.
You can register ahead of time, but if you can't, it's still fine. You can just come and we can accommodate you.
Yeah, just show up. We had a lot of show-ups yesterday, and that was totally fine.
Oh, that's good.
That's welcome.
That's right.
So what I did yesterday, Jean-Marie, we were checking some people in, and a few people said they're radio show listeners. And I was like, well, hey, I'm going to be on with Jean-Marie tomorrow. Is there any topic you would like me to speak about in particular?
Hey, there you go.
I thought that was a good idea. And one gentleman said to me, I really want to know about the progression of trusts. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, you guys talk about different kinds of trusts and when do I need each and what's the differences and whatnot. And so I thought it'd be a good opportunity to talk about what I refer to as the estate planning continuum.
Right.
Right. And when I say continuum, I'm referring to, a line of progression, mm-hmm. of things that change over time. And when you were 18 years old, your life was probably very different than you are how many years later, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your estate plan has to adjust for that. And so it's a fluid plan that changes with you, but it's on you to make those changes. So I thought it'd be a good idea to go through some of like the different stages of life, what we should have at each stage, and then focus a little bit on the later years and different kinds of trusts.
Yeah, sure. And I can certainly talk about the beginning of this continuum because I'm going through it right now with college-age children.
Perfect. Perfect.
Right? And the first thing you find out when they turn 18, you go to the doctor and you're kicked out of the doctor's office or you can't get any information, right? So when you legally turn 18, your parents aren't allowed to get medical information, financial information. They're also not allowed to see your grades in college.
Unless they sign it over to you, I guess.
Unless they sign it over to you.
You have all this new paperwork to do, don't you?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So if your child's going away to college or even not, if they're just at home, but you still want to be able to help them if something happens to them.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So they should do a healthcare proxy and a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for older people doing estate planning.
No, we're always planning for the worst case scenario. I don't hope for the best, plan for the worst. That's the age old adage. But and I'm sure a lot of you out there that may have 18-year-old children or grandchildren may still view them as children. But in New York, legally speaking, they are adults. So you lose that power as a parent. So I think it's great just in case, right? Something happens.
Just in case.
And it's kind of easy to, not sell it to the kids themselves because they have to be willing to sign this paperwork. But hold on, I just got my freedom. You want me to give it back to you? Whoa. But you can limit it as much as you want and it's revocable at any time. And,
don't
feel like you're giving up any powers. This is just in case type thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you have, you break your leg and you go to the hospital and, your parents need to call in to find out what's going on.
Sure.
They can find out what's going on.
And what are those two documents that they should have at that age?
So they should have a healthcare proxy where they should pick, I'm saying mom or dad. It doesn't have to be mom or dad. But
guardian, whoever, right?
That's right. To be able to talk to doctors and make medical decisions for them. And the power of attorney. So, if you're 18, you probably don't have a lot of assets, but there's certainly, you have a bank account for your job. There's things that you may have to sign legally that if you're incapacitated, your parents could do for you.
And power of attorney is very amendable. You can modify it, really, and choose different options and whatnot. So some of those more broad powers, your power of gifting, for example, if I'm 18 years old and I don't really have any assets, I may need to give power of gifting. So if the young man or young woman's nervous about signing that particular portion, they don't have to. So we can make it for them, particularly for them.
Right. I tend to use the simpler version. Well, it's the same power of attorney, but only the powers on the first two pages, because those are the very basic powers.
Right, and those are the ones that would most likely come up for them.
Right.
So we're past college, we're a little bit older, and next main event, maybe we get married, or maybe we have children. What are the concerns you want to address at that age, and what documents should we be looking at then?
So then you need a will, right?
Yeah.
And if you have children, especially, you need to come up with a guardian. And I know a lot of people know this and think about it, but never get in to do it, right? And, that's really risky because if something happened to you, you don't really have control over what happens to the money and who's taking care of your children. So it's really basic. You just need to sit down and get a will done. Once you make that hard decision, who's going to do that?
It's a lot of gravity, realizing that you are now responsible for another human being's life, right? And if something did happen to you and your spouse or the other parent, who is going to come in and step in?
Mm-hmm.
Is it brother Joey that has a gambling addiction and we want him to get handle our child's money?
Right.
Or is it our sister Jane, the accountant, right? So you want to make sure you get the right people in and put those people in the place that, different powers, trustees, handling the money, guardian, kind of handling the custody of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the major concerns at that stage of life.
Right.
So then fast forward a little bit more. We're older. Our kids are getting older. We're gathering assets, growing our assets. Maybe we own a small business. Mm-hmm. What are we looking at now? What kind of changes do we want to look at that age?
So as you get older, you may want to, if your children are now older, you may want to update your will, first of all. You know, maybe you don't need a trust for them and a guardian for them. But as you get older and you have assets, you may want to think about a trust. And this is where different types of trusts come into play, because there's some trusts that are appropriate when you're younger and then some trusts that when you're older. And it's not the same.
Yeah. This is probably the first stage of life for many people, that the consideration of trusts in general kind of comes up for different reasons. One important reason that I see quite often is when I talk about owning assets, and particularly owning, you know, real estate in different states, mm-hmm. avoiding probate. So with liquid type accounts, many of those accounts, I can avoid probate myself by just naming beneficiaries on the accounts or joint owners. So I could do a lot of that work on my own. Just go to the financial institution, fill out a beneficiary designation form, and that's all set. But what if I own, my house in general, what if I have other properties in different states? Why could a trust be important there?
So that's important because real estate, you know, it's between you and your spouse. But when you're both gone, it doesn't go automatically to your children. So you would have to go to probate for the real estate. And if you have a vacation home, you'd have to do probate in two states. You can't do probate in just one state and automatically do it in another. So that leads to a lot of extra work, a lot of extra legal fees. And this is where everything is fine and no one's, you know, everyone's getting along.
Right. That's in the best case scenario.
This is in the best case scenario. You have time and money that you're spending just to have the houses sort of transferred to your kids.
And in New York, even in the best case scenario where we say, all right, we're doing probate, but no one's contesting. I have a small nuclear family. There's not a bunch of people we have to go find. It takes about 7 months to a year at a minimum just because of the different rules and timelines that New York State has in place. And if I'm dealing with that and I have to do another probate in Florida because I own a property in Florida as well, let's say, that could be increased significantly. I don't know about doubled, but it certainly will add a lot of time onto that second part. Because additionally, with that situation, you do the probate first in New York. You can't do them simultaneously. You'd have to do the probate in the other state where the other property is after you are appointed in New York.
Right.
So it kind of delays things even more. Now, what if I have all these assets and avoiding probate is very important for me for whatever reason, but I still am leaving assets to young individuals and I want to, let's say, avoid probate but not give it to them outright. What can I do there?
So that's kind of a problem with putting beneficiary designations on. They only work, you know, if it's an adult. So if you name your kids as a beneficiary on your IRA, say, and you pass away, they can get that at 18. So before we were talking about keeping things in trust, you know, what if you have, or life insurance policy?
Yeah.
I had a case like that. It was a very large life insurance policy. The dad had done a will. This was interesting. He had trusts in the will for the children.
Mm-hmm.
However, his life insurance policy named the kids directly. And those kids were in high school when he passed. So this daughter, who's 18, was getting a couple $100,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Directly.
Not, wow.
Not at all what he wanted, but he didn't coordinate and have beneficiary match the trust.
Something he wasn't expecting to happen, but yet it did. So
that's right.
Yeah, that probably wasn't his intent. And we see that quite often. Mm-hmm. And how important that is. It's not only the creation of the trust, but when we sit down with clients and go through their asset list and, you know, what kind of assets do you have? Who's listed on beneficiaries with them? We give them instructions after. So we created this trust and this is the point of the trust, but the trust only controls assets that go into it. And the trust don't control assets that you have beneficiaries on. So in that case, which is not an uncommon case, I'm assuming that individual thought, all right, I have the trust, I'm all set, and just didn't realize, well, if I don't make the trust the beneficiary on that insurance policy, it's still going to go to the kids outright, and they're still going to get it all at 18 years old or get control at 18 years old.
Right. So your whole plan that you had under your will, you know, didn't really happen.
Additionally, too, what I'll say there, we have a caller.
Oh, no. So we're at the break. So we'll be right back after the break.
Big pause.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany, Clifton Park, or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the second half of the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. If you have any questions for us, please give us a call at 518-476-5900. And we'll answer questions about estate planning and elder law. And if you don't want to call into the radio, but you'd still like to hear some hear us talk about estate planning, you can come to a live seminar on Monday. The seminar is going to be about wills versus trusts. You know, what's the difference between a will and a trust? When do you need to go to probate? And you can come to the seminar. It's at the Staybridge Suites, which is off of Wolf Road by Colony Center. And at 10 o'clock, I'm speaking, and at 2 o'clock, Dave is speaking.
Yeah, definitely take advantage of that opportunity. Great programs.
Right.
So before the break, we were kind of talking about avoiding probate, but also being able to control those assets. If we have young beneficiaries, people not realizing I have this trust in place, maybe that says the assets don't go to individuals till they're older, but then I forget to update those beneficiaries.
That's right.
And I pass away, and it ends up going to those beneficiaries when they, you know, they control at age 18. Anyway, and what I wanted to add about that before I was so rudely interrupted by the break, but what I was going to add to that was additionally, if it has to go through probate or even if a beneficiary is appointed and they get it younger, for anyone to get control of that, so say there's a surviving parent or another family member that wants to help out until the child turns 18, they're going to have to also be appointed as what's called guardian of the property in surrogates court.
That's right.
You know, and even if you're a surviving parent, you would say, well, I'm the surviving mom, I'm the surviving dad, they're not 18 yet, I'm still in control. Well, to a degree, but over that property they inherited, you're not automatically in control.
That's right.
You would still have to apply to be appointed as a guardian of the person. And again, that's time, money, and stress that could otherwise have been avoided.
It's
with the
extra
trust.
Work and it's extra delay in the probate process to have the guardian appointed. That's happened to
absolutely
us a lot of times, right?
Absolutely. And you know, people say too, well, why can't I just handle all of that in a will? You know, is there a way to control assets beyond my passing in my will and versus my trust? And kind of what's the difference there, Jay Marie?
Yeah, so I mean, we're throwing out a lot of trust language here, and there's lots of trusts.
Very confusing, I know.
Very confusing. So, you know, a distinction I want to bring up is testamentary trusts and living trusts, right? So testamentary trusts are trusts that are created on your death. So that's a type of trust where you have young children. This trust is set up on your death for your young children. During your, you know, it's not set up while you're alive.
Right.
So that testamentary trust, you can put that in your will. You can put directions in there.
And it's just provisions. And because people ask me, like, well, what is a trust? What is it?
Right.
What is it? Like, I can't conceptualize
right.
it. And in this case, with the testamentary, it's really just another provision, a section of your will that has certain instructions and a framework that if, hey, when I die, if these conditions apply, you know, if someone's under a certain age or whatever other conditions I want to put on it, then at that point, I want this language to control, and it forms that trust, and those conditions come into play. So that's the testamentary trust, right?
That's right. And testamentary trust can be, like you said, not just for children. It could be for disabled individuals, someone who's receiving benefits like a special needs trust. There's you know, adults who don't spend money wisely. There's all kinds of ways you can do a testamentary trust.
Yeah, beneficiaries with drug issues, that's or right. gambling issues, or whatever the case may be. We can get pretty creative with that depending on your situation and your needs.
Lately, it's been a lot of, I don't like the son-in-law or daughter-in-law. Yeah,
I hear that too often, unfortunately.
That's happened a lot. So
oh boy.
I'm leaving it in trust for my daughter, so nothing goes to my son-in-law.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, it's your money.
Right? Your wishes. Hey,
your wishes, right?
I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you want to, it is your money, right?
Right.
So you can do what you want with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was the testamentary trust. And now, what is a living trust or an inter vivos trust, as we call it sometimes?
Right.
And we want to sound fancy.
That's right. Or show off our Latin that we've read.
You know, I took 4 years of Latin in high school.
So did I. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it useful to you?
No.
Honestly?
No.
No, not at all.
No.
Me neither.
I know like what inter vivos means, but that's not really.
Yeah, but that's probably from law school, not even from high school Latin. I know.
All right. So living trusts are trusts that it's a trust that you create when you're alive, and you're going to put your assets into that trust while you're living. And there's reasons for doing that. Mainly it's to avoid probate. So that trust you set up, if it's a revocable trust, which is what happens when you're younger,
usually, right?
Usually, you're going to use a revocable trust where you're in charge and you set the terms of the trust. And I see we have a caller.
Oh, great.
I think so. Let me hook things up here. And we think we have Kim from Castleton on the phone. Kim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, good morning, Kim. How are you?
Good morning. I have a question. My husband and I are downsizing, and he has Parkinson's and a little bit of dementia. And we're going to be buying a small house, and eventually I think he'll have to go into a assisted living nursing home.
Right.
Should my name be on the deed for the next home? And also about Medicaid, I want to ask a question about that too. His assets for Social Security and the VA benefit that he has and the RMDs that he gets are probably totaling $63,000, and that's what we live on to pay our utilities. If he goes on Medicaid, how will I live in the new house without having any of that money? Or will the nursing home take most of that?
So there's kind of two pieces to it. I'll talk about one piece and then give Phil the second.
Sounds good.
So the first is how should the house be owned? And you kind of are jumping the gun here. We were going to talk about irrevocable trusts. So we'll bring those up now. An irrevocable trust protects the house or any assets in case you need Medicaid, right? So if you created an irrevocable trust and put that house in an irrevocable trust, and then your husband needs Medicaid to pay for his care, that those assets will be protected. Now, there's a waiting period. There's a 5-year waiting period for if he has to go into a nursing home. There's no waiting period if he needs community Medicaid. So there's a lot. That's a kind of a lot of information. But generally, an irrevocable trust is what's going to be best for him. And then you had a second question about the income and how that's protected. So Phil.
Yeah. So say we take care of the house first and depending on the situation, Kim, you know, it require obviously a deeper conversation one-on-one with you about your situation and your goals and your needs about if an irrevocable trust is actually right for you at this time, but it very well may be, and it's a great tool. But once we get past that, so say there comes a certain time that your husband does need some kind of long-term care. And that could be many different levels. Let's assume first is the highest level nursing home care, right? So if I go into a nursing home and we get Medicaid to pay, and you know, you brought up some things, Social Security, RMDs, pension, and those things are income. So they're not assets. Assets are treated differently than income. So in the asset world, they can only have a certain amount of assets. But if you're still well, Kim, all the assets, bank accounts, investment accounts, those could be transferred to you because transfers between spouses are one of the exemptions from the 5-year look back. So we could take advantage of that, but the income is different. So those things you described are income. And normally, if Medicaid is paying for my nursing home care, I have to contribute my income. So the individual who's in the nursing home has to contribute their income. It's called a NAMI, not to be confusing, but the net available monthly income, right? So all those things you mentioned may have to be paid to the nursing home first before Medicaid picks up. Now, you, as what we'll call the well community spouse, the well spouse, if you're asked, if your income yourself, you know, whatever you get from Social Security or any pensions is below a certain threshold, which right now is about $3,400 a month, if you're below that, you may be able to, or you will be able to keep a portion of your husband's income to bring you up to that level. And sometimes we can try hardship too and say, you know, we need the extra income because we have these household expenses and Medicaid may make an exemption, allow us to keep some more of his income. But ultimately, a portion of his income will have to go to the nursing home to pay for some of the care before Medicaid picks up the rest. Now, that was for nursing home Medicaid, right? So if he's home and need aides in the house, it's a little bit different. And there's ways we could protect almost 100% of his income and still get Medicaid to pay for that.
That's right. And so
that gets pretty complicated, so I don't want to get too deep into that today, but there is a way to protect the income for home care Medicaid.
Okay. But should my name be on the new deed only, and then I have my own personal trust, because he's not going to make 5 years. He's going to be, there's not going to be a 5-year look back.
Okay. Then I would say, yeah, it should be in your name, right? The new house. But that's just really, like, briefly based on our talk here, we should have a meeting with
you. It would have to be a more depth in conversation about how your future looks and things of that nature, because those things play a role here in that decision. Okay. But yeah, feel free to reach out to him.
I thought the understanding was that the nursing home got all of the Social Security except for like $50.
Generally, but that's if there's no well spouse. So there's some caveats to that. So yeah, let's say it was a single person that went into a nursing home with no spouse. Then yes, they would take all of your income and you get what's called a $50 disregard to, I don't know, get haircuts or whatever they do in the nursing home. Yeah. But yes, but there's always caveats to those rules. So you hear a lot of things, but it may not be the full context in your situation. So yeah, if you want to learn more about your situation and what you should do, please call our office. We can schedule a free consultation and discuss that in more depth.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. And our office number is 518-465-7581. You can call to schedule an appointment with any of us if you have more follow-up questions.
So in the last few minutes, let's transition now. We talked about revocable trust. I'm a little bit younger. We're talking about avoiding probate. We don't have much time left here, but now I'm older, I'm retired, and I'm really concerned. Similar to the caller Kim just now, we're concerned about, hey, what happens to my assets now if myself or my spouse does need long-term care one day? You know, what do I do there? I have this revocable trust and my assets are in there. They're protected, right?
No, they're not. No, they're misconception.
Nope.
So you have to do an irrevocable trust. And the irrevocable trust, in addition to avoiding probate, protects your assets in the future. So that's what you should do. When people ask, you know, when should I start thinking about that? You know, I typically say retirement age. You know, that's a good time to do that. 65-ish. I don't know. People retire at all different ages. But
yeah, I think it's good because you have a general kind of idea about what your retirement looks like or what you want it to look like.
That's right.
And the benefit of this type of irrevocable trust, the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, that people don't realize, and I think you and Dave touched on a lot of this last week, even though it's irrevocable, the term is irrevocable, there's a lot of flexibility, a lot of things we can change within the trust after it's created. There are ways to get assets out of that trust if we need to.
Right.
So don't be scared like, oh no, I'm doing this and what if my situation changes? I'm stuck. Right. Not so. There's things we could do. It's just we have to do it the right way.
Yeah. There's things that you can do that are built in. And also you're going to make one of your family members, you know, not your spouse, but it could be your children, the trustee. So you have a lot of control through that trustee.
Yeah. But what if that child, you know, goes rogue and I don't want them to be trustee anymore? Am I stuck?
You fire them.
You're fired.
You're fired.
Or you're cut out as a beneficiary unless you do what I say.
That's right.
There's things we can do. That went quick as always. Wow.
It did. Thank you for spending this half hour with us and have a great weekend.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.